Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, November 25th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Albany Cardiothoracic Surgeons, providing patient-centered heart surgery for over 40 years in the Capital Region, practicing cardiac surgery at St. Peter's Hospital, ACTSURG.com. Joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. Robert Sachs. He's an ophthalmologist, retinal specialist, and director of retina services at Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region. He is here to answer your questions about eye care and treatment. The number to call with your questions, 800-348-2551. Again, it's 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Sachs and your calls coming up on Vox Pop Medical Monday, right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is ophthalmologist Dr. Robert Sachs. Dr. Sachs is a retinal specialist and has been director of retina services at Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region since 1989. He specializes in macular degeneration, retinal vein disease, and diabetic retinopathy. Dr. Sachs earned his medical degree from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and Dentistry. He is board certified by the American Board of Ophthalmology and is a member of several professional societies, including the New York Ophthalmological Association Society and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. Dr. Sachs is a great guest on this program, always a popular one, so get your calls in early if you can. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Robert Sachs, welcome back.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you very much.
You had mentioned in the break between the news and when we start the show here that there are some new technologies you're excited about for nearsightedness, farsightedness, astigmatism, that kind of thing.
That's true. There are, we all have heard about LASIK, as a which is a laser technology used to reshape the surface of the eye.
Yep.
But they're coming up with some alternatives, let's put it that way, that might be better for certain people, including what we call an intraocular contact lens, where a thin lens is designed based on measurements of your eye and placed inside the eye in front of your natural lens, so it doesn't disturb the natural lens, and it corrects astigmatism, nearsightedness, or farsightedness. So you can have the effect of very clear vision without glasses, yet not having to use contact lens on the eye surface or having a LASIK procedure, which in some cases there have been some side effects. What's really nice about it is it's reversible. If you don't like it, that lens can be removed, and it's designed to stay there for many, many years, decades really, until cataract surgery is needed, when the natural lens of the eye becomes opaque and can't be seen through easily. And that lens, the intraocular contact lens, is removed at the same time the cataract is removed, and both are replaced with an intraocular lens that we use now for cataract surgery. So it gives people who are prior to cataract surgery the ability to have vision corrected in a fairly straightforward outpatient operation.
But of course, one of the things about glasses, if you're nearsighted or farsighted, is that often your eyesight will change and you will need a new prescription. I assume then that you would need a new lens. You'd need one out and a new one in.
Well, we don't plan on doing that, but glasses might be indicated, for example, as people get older, they need reading glasses, they need help with up close, and for that you might need that. But that's the same with even with LASIK. When the eye is recalibrated in a sense to get rid of nearsightedness, usually people around age 40 to 50 end up needing the beginning of reading glasses.
And at what age do people typically need cataract surgery?
Well, usually, in the 60s, 70s, and beyond. It's a slow process where the natural lens of the eye, which is a clear disc of protein in youth, starts to become opaque. Think of a piece of saran wrap gradually turning into wax paper. Think of a pair of glasses gradually turning into sunglasses. So those two things are occurring, in a sense, simultaneously. The lens becomes a little darker, and it becomes a little more opaque. At some point, it bothers you. You'll notice difficulty driving at night, glare from headlights, glare from the television. You can't see the crawl on the television. You can't see the letters. Colors become dull. A lot of reasons that people come in complaining of decrease in vision, and it's due to cataracts, which everybody will develop. Everybody has a lens in the eye, and everybody's lens evolves into a cataract over time.
What is the latest age, the oldest age, that someone that you have dealt with has had cataract surgery?
Over 100.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Is it worth it? I mean, how many years you got left?
Well, it's not a matter of that. It's a really quality of life thing. And there are people who come in who, at whatever stage, we've operated on people in their 30s and 40s if necessary. But we have had people come in who are over 100, and they've recognized that their vision has gotten to the point where they can't do what they need to do. And the operation is an outpatient procedure. The actual operation itself takes, 8 minutes or less. It's very quick, very elegant, and the outcomes are fantastic. Carefully measured prior, we can correct vision really well.
Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest on this Medical Monday, and let's jump on the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. Laura in New Paltz. Laura, you're first.
Hi, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I have a few questions, and they're all related. The first is, what is the computer doing to our eyes, and do we need glasses that protect us from the blue light? And then the other thing is, I've read a lot and been told a lot that glasses are actually bad for our eyes. Not the blue light glasses, but regular glasses are actually bad for our eyes because they force our eye muscles to, do stuff that the eye muscles really aren't prepared to do. And I was wondering how we fix that, and maybe there's charts where there's eye muscle exercises that we need, what kind of charts. And lastly, what supplements are the best supplements for our eyes? I read a lot about eyes, and that's why I'm asking all these questions.
Yeah.
I'll take my answers off the air, and I thank you.
Okay.
A lot to unpack.
So, let's start with the first question you talked about, which is about glasses in general. And let's talk about the computer. So what the computer forces us to do is focus on a spot, one spot, for periods of time. And as a result, people often don't blink enough. That's been recognized. Their eyes dry out. And they're also focusing at a point that's near that requires the accommodating system of the eye that allows us to focus up close to basically lock into a certain position that's based on the distance that something is from you. For example, looking at a computer screen, you have to focus at a certain intensity. When you look to read and hold things a little closer, you're focusing even more strongly. And there is an eye muscle within the eye that controls the focus. But when you're on a computer for long periods of time, you're actually fatiguing that muscle. You're forcing it into a position and you're trying to keep it there for periods of time. So we talk about what we call the 20-20-20 rule, which I tell people all the time. It means if you're on a computer, every 20 minutes or so, stop, look about 20 feet away, let the eye muscle relax, so you're looking at distance, for about 20 seconds. It just gives the eyes a chance to the muscles to recalibrate a little bit. The other thing that happens in people who use the computer a lot is their eyes dry out, as I said, because they're staring at a screen. So using artificial tears or even trying to humidify your environment, if you can do so with some plants around or a little humidifier, it just moistens the air, or the artificial tears act as a lubricant and a moisturizer and keeps the eye surface comfortable. When the eye surface is comfortable and has the appropriate amount of tears on there, and tears are actually quite an interesting a structure. It's not just water. There's an aqueous layer, a water-based layer that contains proteins and it contains antibodies. And on the top of that is what we call a lipid layer, a little layer of a fatty material, oil that smooths the surface. And the tears have to be in adequate quantity to keep the surface of the eye smooth and comfortable, but also smooth and seeing at its maximum capacity. So taking care of your eyes while you're on the computer involves resting them once in a while. It doesn't take a lot to do, and using artificial tears to keep the eyes moist. Glasses themselves you asked about, glasses are designed to correct refractive error. So nearsightedness or farsightedness or astigmatism is a function of the structure of the eye, and glasses will correct that when properly given. That's for distance, and that's actually quite helpful. That makes you see more clearly and doesn't really involve the eye's focusing system. The focusing system kicks in when you go to read, and as we get older, the lens within the eye starts to stiffen as well as change its opacification, as I discussed moments ago. And also, the focusing system, the muscle that controls that focusing, fatigues more easily. So now you've got a stiffer lens that needs to be, its shape needs to be changed by this muscle within the eye. And that's what causes fatigue, and that can lead to headaches. But glasses properly fit and not too strong will give you the ability to focus without the eye overexerting itself.
What about exercises? Our caller mentioned possibly doing some exercise.
That she did. There really aren't any exercises that way. The muscles that move the lens in the eye are not these striated muscles that you think about, like in your arms and legs. Like you can build up your arms and legs by repetitive exercise, weightlifting example.
Right.
These are smooth muscles that don't bulk up like that.
Yeah.
So doing exercises is not as effective as you might imagine. She also mentioned supplements. I'm a big believer in a good diet, of course.
Carrots.
Carrots, vitamin A, that's really not so much of a problem anymore. I'm a big believer in omega-3 fatty acids, which is fish oil, and the triglyceride form of the fish oil is the one that's best absorbed by the intestine and best utilized by the body. Just a good balanced diet. So a multivitamin is sometimes a good idea just to kind of take the edge off the diet that we often have in this country that contains a certain amount of processed foods and may have some depleted vitamins as a result. So anything that kind of balances out your diet is good. I mean, the eye is part of the body. It's actually the retina, the back of the eye, is brain tissue. It's actually part of the brain. And as a result, it has a very precise and very rapid metabolism, and it is susceptible to certain metabolic changes over the years, which is probably what leads to macular degeneration. And you mentioned blue light, so let's talk about that. Ultraviolet light, we know, can weaken the back of the eye. Blue light is not quite ultraviolet, but there's some evidence that exposure to a lot of blue light can also, over time, lead to damage to the back of the eye. So, you know, again, most sunglasses will help.
Our guest today is Dr. Robert Sachs. It's Medical Monday. The number is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop, Medical Monday, Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest. Before we get back to the calls, you know, this country and around the world, more and more screens. People are looking at more and more screens, whether they be phones, computers, whatever. In that 20 or so years since things have been ramping up in that regard, are you seeing more business?
Not business necessarily, but in for example, in children who spend much more time on close screens, they're concerned about increasing frequency of nearsightedness.
Yeah,
because the focusing eye tends to affect the growth pattern of the eyeball in youth.
Yeah,
so these are things that are being addressed. We have to look at more things that are smaller, so people are more dependent on tiny, you know, little vision glasses or some other aid. And, of course, people are much more aware of the fact that when the vision starts to be influenced, they want to be seen and taken care of.
Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest. Two emails here, and then we'll jump back on the phones. This one's from Rita. Rita writes, I've heard there are night vision yellow glasses that improve night driving. Please discuss impaired elderly night vision and remedies.
The yellow lenses, what they do is they absorb blue light. Blue light, if you look at the spectrum, remember when they used to put a white light through a prism and it would break into the several stripe colors? Blue light is the light that is scattered the most. That's why the sky is blue. The light comes in from the sun, hits the atmosphere, and the light scatters. But blue is scattered the most, so our sky looks blue. Anyway, blue light can be disturbing to someone because of that scatter. And so the yellow lenses were developed to try to absorb the blue light and get rid of it. So you wear a pair of yellow sunglasses, it cuts down the light, so things are dimmer, and it doesn't really help all that much in clinical studies.
Okay.
The point is, if you're having a problem, have a medical eye exam. Let's take a look. You might have cataracts that need to be remedied. You might have a refractive error that has not been recognized. You might have a corneal problem. The surface of the eye might be irregular in some way that could be fixed. So, you know, the yellow glasses really don't help, as far as most ophthalmologists believe.
But they're as seen on TV.
Absolutely.
All right, yeah. All right. This one's from Sheila. After a recent visit to my eye doctor, I was told that I suffer from periodic calcium deposits under my eyelids. These deposits irritate my eyes, causing occasional redness. What is it that causes these calcium deposits, and how can I prevent them? And that's from Sheila.
Well, under the eyelid are little tear glands along, you know, in the skin of the under eyelid. And sometimes calcium deposits in there, and they form what we call concretions, little tiny specks of calcium. And as long as they're under the skin surface, you don't really detect them, but they erode their way through eventually, and they start to irritate the eye. They rub on the eye surface like a little grain of sand.
Yeah.
And we go in the office, and we anesthetize the eye with eye drops, flip the eyelid over, and we can actually, you know, get these little things out of there. They're easy to do. And some people get them recurrently, and we have to see them on a regular basis to remove those little concretions so that they don't have that problem. One of the things that can help, of course, is using moisturizing drops, lubricating drops on the eye, artificial tears. I'll go back to this time and time again.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up artificial tears. When you have eye surgery, many different varieties, oftentimes the post-surgical regimen includes putting some of these artificial tears on. But you had mentioned that the actual tears that we produce have, in addition to saline water, you have lipids and other things in that. Do these artificial mm-hmm. tears have those?
The actual artificial tears, the best ones out there, do have, they try to duplicate the tears as closely as possible. They're not perfect, but they keep working on the formula. You talk about the post-cataract surgery or post-eye surgery regimen of tears, of drops. Those are usually medicated drops, antibiotics, anti-inflammatory steroids, and anti-inflammatory other drops that are necessary to help with the healing process. But artificial tears, the eye really gets dry easily. And this environment, we're in a low humidity zone. The air in the summer is air conditioned. That dries the air out. In the winter, it's worse. When the heat comes on in your home or in your place of business, the air can be terribly dry. And using something to mitigate that is a smart move. Artificial tears are really terrific for that. And they help the eye feel better. And as I said earlier, they help the eye see better.
Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest. And back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
It's more likely a foreign body or an infection. Can an extremely itchy sore eye be due to glaucoma?
Good to hear from you, Jim. Not usually. Glaucoma is a silent disease for the most part. It steals your vision gradually and inexorably, but you don't feel it in the vast majority of cases. If your eyes are burning, itching, irritated, that's a surface of the eye problem. That could be as straightforward as a dry eye problem. It could be an allergic issue where you have allergies to things. There's a lot of reasons for that. And again, a good eye examination will rule that out. But glaucoma is not a sign of glaucoma.
Well, Jim, thank you for the call. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest on Vox Pop Medical Monday today. John and Colony. John, you're on.
Thank you for the call, for taking my call.
Sure.
It's for my whole life. I'm 55. My eyes have been red. They literally look like a roadmap. And they don't feel dry. And I've tried all of the tear products and Visine-type products. Nothing seems to help. I was just wondering if you have any recommendations.
Do I have recommendations? There's a lot we can do for dry these days. And it is a real problem. People have that issue where the eyes become irritated and dry. The little blood vessels on the eye surface dilate to bring more blood flow to try to make more tears. You make tears in really basically two different ways. There are a lot of little tiny glands all around the eye surface that produce tears on a regular basis. We call those basal tears. They're made all the time. And then tucked up under your eyebrow, up under the bone, is the lacrimal gland that we all know about. And that produces tears when you laugh or cry. The problem is the lacrimal gland has only two positions, on or off.
Yeah.
So what happens is if you don't make enough of these basal tears that keeps the eye comfortable and keeps the vision good, the eye will dry out to the point where the lacrimal gland gets turned on. And people will tell me that they come in, they say, you know, I'm sitting there and all of a sudden my eyes start to water and I'm mopping my face to get rid of tears. That's the lacrimal gland dumping out a bunch of tears all at once because the basal tears were inadequate. And then they end up in a cycle where the eyes feel better for a little while after that big deluge of tears. And then the eyes dry out again. And then it happens over and over again. So they're telling me that they feel better. And then about a half hour, 40 minutes later, they're cycling again and the eyes are once again wet. That's another form of dry eye. So you say, well, how can it be dry when my eye is wet? But it's the loss of artificial tear production that causes the overproduction from the lacrimal gland. In your case, dilated blood vessels, and whether or not you have symptoms other than that, you may have suppressed that. The point is there are things we can do now. We have specialists in the office who just deal with dry eye. And there are so many things that can be done that can help. That's your next step.
John, thank you for the call. Now, I've heard, I have no idea if this is true, that some people will have chronic dry eye and not even know it.
Well, they may not know it. They may have kind of suppressed the feeling that their eyes are irritated. They blink a lot. They find themselves, their eyes squint down because they don't make enough tears. So they try to preserve what tears they have by squinting and narrowing the fissure between the upper and lower lid. There are a lot of things that people do and maybe don't notice it actively, but we pick that up and probably their friends notice too. Red eyes, squinty eyes. You know, that kind of feeling that you know, they don't want to have any air blowing on them. A vent in the car or a fan is drying, and so they're barely making it with the tears that they have. Any little disturbance, and they do feel it.
Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest today on Medical Monday. 800-348-2551 is the number. Edith in Kingston. Edith, you're on.
Yes, how are you? Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I was calling because I have a question about my my eye surgery that I had about 16 years ago. It actually helped me have a 20/20 vision from my nearsightedness, and it was great. But throughout the years, you know, my vision started to get, you know, just like regular vision, deteriorate little by little. And I'm to the point now where I'm actually wearing glasses again, you know, to drive, mostly for driving at night and things like that.
Sure.
And my question was, if I was to get a second treatment of another laser eye surgery, how much of a risk is that? Do you recommend that or just take my glasses and take what I have?
Well, the LASIK procedure you had uses a special laser to literally polish and change the curvature of the surface of the eye called the cornea. You can only do it to a certain extent because beyond a certain point, you actually can make the cornea too thin and it becomes unstable. Think of a dome of tissue that's clear. You don't want to thin it too much. So there are limits to that. At the time you had it done, they did the amount that was necessary for the amount of nearsightedness you had. But what's happened over the years is your lens in the eye, remember I mentioned how it starts to change to a cataract. Even before it becomes a cataract, it starts to get a little denser, and that changes the focus point of the eye. And this is very common in people who have LASIK, that it lasts for quite a while, and that's great, but
yeah,
it doesn't
right.
last forever. And so at some point, something else needs to be done. Might be glasses or contact lenses, but something needs to be used to correct your lenses until you need cataract surgery, which might be now if that's an issue for you. So that can be examined.
I definitely won't go for the laser.
I'm not saying that.
He really can't diagnose fully on the phone.
I can't diagnose you over the radio, but.
I completely understand. But what I'm asking is now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it, like, because I know that there's risk. So, you know, you confirm with me that I won't do it. But I should really just look into cataract, you know, in the next, like, 10 years or so.
Get a good medical eye examination. Let somebody look at everything and answer all your questions in person. That way you'll know you've got the right answers.
Robert Sachs is our guest today. Thanks, Edith. 800-348-2551 is the number. And Bob in Albany. Bob.
Hello. My question is a follow-up to the doctor's opening statement about adding the additional lens in the eye. prior to cataract surgery. I'm wondering, what about for somebody like myself who had cataract surgery quite a while back at a younger age? A minus 12 was put to about a minus 6, and then unexpectedly, the second eye needed cataract surgery about 5 years later, and so that went to about a minus 12 to about a minus 3. So, of course, it was somewhat high risk because they were minus 12 eyes in both cases. What would I be a candidate or not just on that gross set of facts for this additional lens, given that it's now post-cataract and I did have high-risk surgery?
Right. The short answer is no. They're not designed for that. What you had was you had very nearsighted eyes. That's what the minus 12 you refer to is. And that puts certain risk at the time of cataract surgery, but clearly you had successful surgery, and that's terrific. They were able to correct most but not all of your nearsightedness. We can do that better these days with lenses. But again, at the time, you know that was a good outcome. But no, these extra lenses don't work that way. But there are other techniques that could be used to help you. And again, a good medical eye examination should be able to reveal what those are and see if you want to pursue any of them.
Bob, thanks for the call. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest today. Why is it that when you have a cataract replaced, the doc says, well, it'll never cloud up again?
Well, the cataract is that disc of protein. It's removed during the cataract surgery and replaced with a plastic implant lens that is designed to be there forever.
Yeah.
I tell people that when they dig up your bones in 1,000 years, they'll find your fillings and your eye, you know, your intraocular implants, because they just don't go anywhere. At the time of the cataract surgery, there is a little membrane left behind the cataract that's actually the back surface of the original cataract. It's a thin, at the time, transparent membrane. That always... I say always, 90% time, clouds up and eventually needs a brief in-office laser procedure just to get rid of it. That's the only clouding you might see. But the actual implant lens itself is designed never to do that.
That's pretty amazing. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the number on Medical Monday. Susan in Western Massachusetts. Susan, you're on.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. Dr. Sachs, this is a great show. I've learned so much already. I originally called because I just heard you talking at the beginning about cataracts and age. And I just wondered if you already answered this. What actually causes cataracts? Is it just age or is it also UVA?
Well, the UV light can contribute, but usually it's a medical condition we call TMB, which means too many birthdays. Okay? A lot of things are caused by TMB.
Yeah.
But cataracts develop over time. It's a natural change of the proteins within the lens that leads to that condition. And you can't do anything about it. Things that accelerate the process, for example, are diabetes and certain other medical conditions that will speed up the process. But we don't really have anything useful to slow it down. And maybe that's okay because we have such an elegant technique to replace the cataract when the time comes.
Thank you, Susan. Is it common for one eye to get cataracts faster than in the other eye?
Well, usually they travel fairly closely together, but not necessarily. One thing I didn't mention a moment ago was trauma will accelerate cataract development. You may have had a trauma in youth, and that eye developed a cataract at an earlier point in adulthood.
Yeah.
So, you know, but we deal with that. I mean, if you have a cataract in one eye and it's bothering you, we'll fix it and we'll wait for the other one to mature.
So it's not completely uncommon for that to happen.
No, sir.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest on Medical Monday. Fran in Pittsfield. Fran, you're up.
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Sachs. When are cataracts able to be removed?
Well, we don't like to tell.
Are there stages?
Well, there are. We measure them in a general sense when you come in, but we're really looking for you to say, I can't do this. I'm having trouble reading, sorting colors, driving at night, watching TV, something that tells us that this thing is in the way. Because I guarantee after about age 40 to 50, you have some degree of cataract, but how problematic that is for you is an individual thing. So we have people coming in with early cataracts and it just drives them crazy. We help them out. We have other people come in with denser cataracts, and they say, I can do whatever I want to do. I don't have any problems. So we don't touch them. So it's very individual.
Okay, but, like, I have cataracts, but the doctor said they weren't able to be removed yet.
Well,
so I didn't know what stage.
He's being conservative, which is great. And again, you continue to see him on a regular basis, and at some point the two of you will come to a consensus that it's time to go. But you have to tell him if you're having problems.
I'm driving at night.
Well, then that's what you should be telling him.
Okay, I did. Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Fran. We have to take a break here. Dr. Robert Sacks is our guest. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And we'll be right back. Vox Pop Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Wow, the lines are loaded. If you hear somebody hang up, that would be your cue. But you never know. We may not get to all of these. A few emails here, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Dick in Lenox. What is the doctor's opinion of the newer bluish car headlights?
Though the xenon headlights are very bright, and they do have a bluish cast to them. That blue in itself is probably not a problem, but they are quite intense, and people who have cataracts will find that those lights glare more easily. So maybe that's going to drive some business.
Well, this is the follow-up from Dick and Lennox. Is there any difference for oncoming drivers regarding the pupil-constricting properties of blue light versus yellow light and the corresponding recovery?
It's really the total amount of light that your pupils react to. But as I say, the light passes through the cornea, which should be clear and smooth, and through the lens, which ideally should be transparent. And any deviation from that will cause some refraction of the light and will give you that glare effect. Oftentimes, as we're all instructed, when the headlight hits you, look away, look over to the right side of the road so you don't get the headlight straight in the eye.
This one's from Irene. Upon occasion, I see what looks like white lightning flashes, especially at night or going into a dark room. What's up with that? Something else to be aware of or freaked out about? And that's from Irene.
Well, when we hear of flashes, especially if they're associated with new floaters, we're concerned about the retinal integrity, the wall of the eye. And flashes can be indicative of some stress on the wall of the eye from some of the fluids within the eye moving and possibly pulling against the wall of the eye or pushing against the wall of the eye in an abnormal fashion. So people who have flashes, especially if they're new onset, but really anyone should have a good dilated eye examination. Let the ophthalmologist get a good look at the wall of the eye and make sure that you don't have any peripheral problems in the peripheral retina, in the farthest edges of the retina.
All right. Jim in Great Barrington wants to know about histoplasmosis in relation to the eye. How is it diagnosed? What problems might it cause? Have you any experience with it?
Yes, histoplasmosis is an infectious disease. It's a soil organism, if it gets into the body, it tends to like nervous tissue, and the back of the eye is just that. And we can see some evidence of that in people who have had inflammation. It causes a certain pattern of inflammation in the eye. Blood tests will reveal its presence. Hopefully it won't cause any damage to the visual parts of the eye, but just to the more peripheral structural parts. But it can be a devastating infection in the eye.
All right, this one's from Vicky. Last spring, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis in my eyes, which was very debilitating. Can you speak about this and what I can do to protect my eyes? And that's from Vicky.
Well, arthritis is inflammation of joints, and your eye doesn't really have any joints, but you can have autoimmune problems in the eye as well as in other parts of the body, like arthritis. And a lot of people who have arthritis have issues with eyes, one of which is very common is dry eye, because the the inflammation can often affect those tear-producing cells on the surface of the eye, so the eyes tend to be dry. You can get some inflammation inside the eye. We can look for that. We can treat that with topical drops or medications. There are other things that can be done.
Forever?
Sometimes it takes a while before the condition works its way out of the system.
Okay. All right, this one's from Mandy, and then we'll jump back on the phones. Mandy says, what can be done to remove a white bump on the eyelid on the lash line, almost like a pimple?
Well, along the lash line are a series of small oil glands that produce some of the oil that is the that coats the tears on the surface of the eye. It's all part of the natural process. It also makes the it coats the lashes and makes those look kind of luxuriant. Point being that you can get a little congestion of one of those glands. Sometimes it can form a little infection, and you get a little pimple like a sty or what we call a chalazion if it gets to a larger state. But sometimes those little bumps are just little congested oil glands, and an ophthalmologist can look at those and determine what needs to be done. Sometimes something can be done very quickly in the office to remove that, but they're very common.
Okay, let's go back to our phone line, 800-348-2551. Dr. Robert Sachs, our guest. Judy in Kingston. Judy, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Sachs. I have a cataract in my right eye that's driving me crazy. But in addition to that, I have been diagnosed with pseudo-exfoliation glaucoma.
Right.
And I know that because I have this glaucoma, it wouldn't be like normal cataract surgery. There have to be other considerations taken. And, you know, I also have astigmatism, and I have dry eye. So,
You got the trifecta here.
Yeah. I'm wondering about risks, and I know there aren't too many doctors who would know enough about glaucoma to handle cataract surgery with someone with glaucoma.
Right.
I'm wondering if there's someone in the Albany area or who you could recommend, and, you know, what might an outcome be?
All right, Judy, he's really not allowed to recommend on the air, but you can do some general recommendations.
Right. Okay, all right.
Pseudoexfoliation, though, is a condition where the eye produces a protein in abnormal concentrations in the eye, and it deposits in different places in the eye, so that's how we detect it. And if it deposits in the drainage port that allows the natural fluid in the eye to leave the eye in a normal fashion, that can cause limitations in that drainage. The pressure in the eye can rise, and there's your glaucoma. Cataracts we spoke about, and what pseudoexfoliation can do is it increases the risk of cataract surgery. Not a huge amount, but enough so that the doctor, the surgeon, just needs to be aware of it and hopefully have certain techniques in order to make sure the cataract surgery goes smoothly.
Okay. So it's not a big deal about astigmatism or dry eye with that, though?
Well, we try to get rid of the dry eye first. We talk about some of the features that we had spoken about earlier and some of the maneuvers we can make. As far as astigmatism goes, we eliminate that at the time of cataract surgery as a routine.
All right, Judy, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest today on Medical Monday, and Bob is in Kingston. Bob, you're up.
Hello. Hi, Ray. Hi, Doc. How you doing?
Hi. Good.
Doc, I've had a surgery for a torn retina in my eye, and I had a spherical buckle. Is that what it's called?
A scleral buckle. Yes.
Yes, I've had that surgery.
Okay.
And since that, my vision in my eye is terrible. So I'm just wondering, can that buckle ever be taken off to restore my vision in my eye?
It's probably not the cause of the poor vision. What happens in a retinal detachment is the retina, which is held onto the wall of the eye. That's think of the film in the camera. It's lines the inside of the eyeball, and it's a very thin nerve tissue. It's actually brain tissue, strictly it's connected to the brain, but it's in this position, loosely attached or lightly attached to the wall of the eye. And if there's a break in the wall of the eye, the retina can actually peel off. And that's what happened, obviously, in your case. And they do a scleral buckle procedure where the wall of the eye is pushed back towards where the retina is. And then this belt, literally a belt of silicone rubber, is put around the eyeball and cinched up like a thick of a belt. So that's what's supporting the wall of the eye and keeping the retina in place. The problem is that when the retina detached in the first place, it's damaged, and they try to put it back in position, but it may look structurally okay, but it may have some functional deficits, and that's why your vision may be poor. Again, going to see someone and having these questions answered at the time of the examination can be very helpful. I don't know what can be done, but we deal with this. Retinal specialists deal with this stuff on a regular basis.
Sure.
But
okay.
the buckle itself may be necessary to just keep the eye in its keep the retina where it should be.
Well, Bob, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Robert Sachs is our guest, and Kathy in Utica. Hello, Kathy. How are things in Utica?
Very good. Very fine.
Good.
Thank you, Dr. Sachs, for taking my call. Also, you're so clear and deeply knowledgeable about the eye. I'm so grateful for this program.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My questions are, I am eligible for cataract surgery, but I was offered the option of having a robotic removal of the cataracts. It will cost more money, but that isn't the real issue. The real issue for me is, can I trust the technology? Is the instrumentation of a high level, and do they have quality control on these measurements? Somehow I'm a little cautious or reticent because of the vagaries of instrumentation versus having my ophthalmologist actually make the measurements at the time of surgery. I'll stop talking.
So well put, Kathy. Answer. Kathy, right. You did very well.
Prior to cataract surgery, the eye is measured carefully for its length and curvature so that an implant lens can be devised. I think you have a kind of incorrect view of this so-called automated cataract surgery. It's using a special laser to make the incisions that the doctor can make and has historically made himself in the wall of the eye to remove the cataract. It just does that. Those fine incisions a little more quickly, although you have to do this in a separate room and it costs quite a bit of money on top of the actual cost of the cataract surgery. In many hands, it is no different. The outcomes are no different. The best cataract surgeons can make that decision, but they'll make it based on whether they think they need the technology, and just make sure you get you see a surgeon who's really highly skilled in cataract surgery, who may or may not find that it's necessary to use that particular laser at that expense.
Thank you for the clarification.
Good luck, Kathy. Thanks for the call. Are there specific cases where robotic surgery may be indicated?
Well, it's not robotic surgery. It's a laser to do something that needs to be done that the cataract surgeon is highly skilled in doing.
Understandable.
Yeah. So some people find that it helps them do it more quickly and maybe with some degree of accuracy more, but the outcomes are in the right hands are really very much the same.
So what you're saying is it'll make a mediocre surgeon a very good surgeon.
I'm not going to say that.
Okay, but all right, we'll just move on then. Our number is 800-348-2551. Lou in Altamont. Lou.
Yes, two-part question. Facing cataract surgery, who is the most important person that I should see in terms of medical advice? And is the type of lens selected of any great importance?
Two good questions. You want to see a cataract surgeon who is very experienced. You want the guy who can not the cataract surgery itself usually goes very, very well and very smoothly. You want the guy who's going to know what to do if something were to occur. You want that experience. You want that quality of surgery. You want the guy with or woman. You want the person with the outcomes that you want to see. And part of the decision-making process before the surgery is performed is what type of lens. We haven't discussed that, but I'll give you a little tutorial. So we have to replace that cataract lens with a lens. If you had a camera at home and you took one of the lenses out of it, it wouldn't take a good picture until you replace the lens. So we have to do that. And the implant lens is called an intraocular lens. And the standard type of lens is what we call a monofocal lens. It has just one distance focus, which means that we set you for the best distance possible at far away. And then you will need reading glasses for computer and reading. More recently, lenses are being devised and continue to be so that contain what we call multifocal qualities that allow that lens to let you see distance and intermediate, say computer screen, and reading without glasses.
Wow.
And those lenses take a very high skill level to put in, and if you're an appropriate candidate for those, they're wonderful. They do cost more. the standard insurance will pay for a standard lens. But if you want the higher technology lenses, the other lenses will eliminate astigmatism, all at the same time at the cataract surgery. So that is an important consideration.
How do you find somebody that is really skilled in that lens decision process versus just making a living at it?
All right. Well, that's a good question. Thanks, Lou. How do you find, you got to do research, right?
Yeah, you want to find out who's, for example, if there's a facility in your area that does a lot of cataract surgery, like an outpatient surgery center, find out who runs that place.
Yeah.
Find out you can call them up and say, who's your top gun?
And you could do your due diligence.
Absolutely.
And the internet's a fabulous place for that.
Absolutely.
Gloria in Albany. Gloria, you're up.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Dr. Sachs. You, as someone said earlier, wonderfully clear. I was recently diagnosed with wet macular degeneration in one eye. What's the predictive value for the second eye also becoming wet? And what causes wet macular degeneration?
All good questions. Macular degeneration is a metabolic imbalance leading to a breakdown, in a sense, in the central part, the macula, of the retina. The retina, we talked about, is the film in the camera. The central part, the bullseye, is called the macula. That's where you see colors, where you see most accurately, where you read. And when the blood vessels and nerves in that area become damaged from a condition like macular degeneration, it can be devastating. So wet macular degeneration is, in a sense, the form when the blood vessels there start to leak and bleed and cause distortion and scarring. The other form of macular degeneration, in a general sense, is the dry form, where the blood vessels and the nerves basically dry up and you have a loss of tissue there. The problem with the disease is that it is considered a bilateral disease, meaning it's in both eyes. The question is it symmetrical in both eyes? And in your case, it sounds like it is not, which is often the case.
Is that good, then?
Well, it's better than having wet macular degeneration in both eyes. So the other eye needs to be watched carefully. It needs to be early detection is the way we can best help you. There are nutritional supports that we talk about that will help to keep the good eye better and to hopefully slow the process of the bad eye.
Thank you. I appreciate that help. Thank you.
Good luck,
Gloria. We appreciate it. Well, we're almost out of time. Let's take one more call here, and let's go to George in Swanton, Vermont. George, you only have about 25 seconds here.
Okay. The question I have is I've had to wear eyeglasses most of my life, and I'm in my 70s now, and a couple of years ago, all of a sudden, I didn't really need the eyeglasses at all anymore. Why is that?
Do you still have your lenses in? You haven't had cataract surgery?
No, nothing.
Right. You have what's called second sight, and it happens in people who have a certain type of refractive error in youth, and as the cataract changes and its refractive properties change, it counteracts the previous refractive error. And for a while, you'll be fine, and then you'll have a cataract that's going to bother you, and you'll need to have surgery. But it might be a while.
That is great. Well, Dr. Sachs, thanks for being here. Support comes from the Joint Replacement Center at Adirondack Health in Saranac Lake, providing tailored orthopedic procedures and rehabilitation to residents of northern New York. Better health, better lives, adirondackhealth.org. Well, we are out of time. And thanks to everybody who called in. I apologize to the many we didn't get to today. Well, Dr. Sachs will be back. I saw him booking his next appearance before the show, so we will talk to Dr. Sachs again. Thanks once again for being here. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, this is good. If you have intellectual property, you want to protect it, you'll want to tune in at 2. It's the Copyright Forum tomorrow. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.